thank you for your enthusiasm, your excitement to be here. We're going to hit on a couple things today. Hopefully this is going to be beneficial and helpful to you. We're going to start with a little bit of a cultural lesson, so I'm sure some of you need some culture, so we'll try to do that. So I'll start with a kind of a lead-in, and we'll tie it in. So let me just throw this fact out. Correct me if you start. In 1980, the New York City subway was rated as one of the most dangerous. I actually wrote it in the early 80s with my dad and I think our family, maybe a few other people, and it was pretty scary. The lights went out a few times on there, and I beat about five guys up. I was about 10 years old, but it was a very nerve-wracking experience. But 10 years later, the New York City subway was rated as one of the safest in the world. So you think, how in the world did that happen? How in the world did this change? What changed to make the New York City subway from being one of the most fearful places to being one of the safest subways in the world? What actually happened is they hired this man named Goetz, and this man named Goetz came in and they said, you have to solve this problem because we have a lot of tourists coming in, the people of New York City are being terrorized, there was just beatings, assaults, theft, there were rapes, there was all these things that were just horrible atrocities. So they brought him in, and he went and witnessed the subway just as an observer. And they said the first day he went into the subway, as he walked in, he saw that the big steel gates that they had were being propped open by people, and they were bullying and threatening the people by basically saying, give us your money, because we're holding this open for you. And two of their gang had their mouths over the turnstiles and were trying to suck coins out of the turnstiles with their mouths. Then as he saw that, he thought, this is just ridiculous. He got on a subway and saw there were many broken windows on the subway. And he said there was graffiti everywhere, inside, outside, all over. And he said it was a very intimidating ride as he got on the subway. He saw just a lot of bullying, threatening, and just a fearful place. People would not talk to each other. People would not interact. They just got to their point, sat down, and had zero interaction. They went into a shell. So he thought about that, and he wondered how to fix it. And he settled upon an idea called the broken window theory. This theory explains how letting small things go unfixed or allowing things to deteriorate brings unwanted problems and greater issues. And I know many of you may wonder, you know, how does this work and apply? Let me show you what the broken window theory is. What it was is a guy had done a study and they put a car in a very rough area and just left it there. It was in a good shape and left it. And he said it took about a week before the first person approached this car that had been left alone for a week, and they broke in and stole the radio and a couple of the rims off the car. He said once that happened, some other people came and did more damage, and it deteriorated quickly after that. So then an experiment where he put a car, similar car, in a similar area, but left a window cracked. I mean, cracked, one window broken in the car, not shattered, just a cracked window. He said it only took a few hours before that car was up on blocks and everything was gone. So he decided to apply that principle to New York City subway. So what he did is he went into the subway, and right away what he did not do is go and threaten people and say there's going to be no murder, which actually had happened 2 weeks before he took it on the subway. A man had killed three people. He said what we're going to do is we're going to stop all the loitering. If you're loitering down there, meaning you have no reason to ride, you're going to be arrested. And the first day he went in, he took a police bus on wheels, and he went in as people went and tried to jump the turnstiles or hold them for someone else. He immediately arrested them. It didn't matter if they were a businessman in a suit or just a migratory person that had no business being there. And he daisy chained them, meaning he just chained them in a line. So they said they had men and executives in suits who had tried to jump the turnstile or someone open, catch it, and they were in a line with everybody else. And he ran warrants on every single person. If they had a warrant, he immediately took them to jail and booked them. He then took every car off the line with a broken window or any graffiti and said, we're not going to put any car in use that has a broken window or any graffiti on it. He actually would go park them at night up at the station where they kept the cars. And he said there were teens that would come and tag the cars at night with graffiti. He'd let them work on it. And as soon as they were done, he'd say, you guys done? Yep. And they'd paint them white, paint right over it. and then take them right back. He said there were people, teens in tears, gang members in tears, that had spent all night tagging the car and it was done in minutes. But he said, that's what I'm going to fix. I'm going to fix the very small problems that no one really notices, and I'm going to attack the New York City subway problem that way. And in 10 years, it became the safest in the world. So, how does this apply spiritually? What I think we have to understand is so many times in life, we see a big problem and we think, oh, what an atrocity. You see someone fall off the wagon spiritually. You see someone, we would say, wreck or ruin their life, which with God's grace can be a setback, but they can always get back in the game. But we see someone who makes a catastrophic mistake, and we can sometimes say, oh, man, I saw that coming. How did you see that coming? And sometimes in our life, we dismiss seemingly insignificant problems. And we dismiss little issues like a broken window or a little graffiti in our life. And they go unchecked, and what happens is lives deteriorate quickly after that. That theory worked in the New York City subway, and I think it can also work in our lives. And I think many times we leave little areas that go unchecked that you think are permissible, but they're not. And what happens when you invite those little areas to become unchecked in your life, you're inviting in much bigger problems. In the same areas, he went into an area and started charting areas that went downhill. And he said, if people stopped fixing broken windows and trimming their lawns, he gave a whole progression of what would happen to neighborhoods, how property values would plummet and crime would increase. So is your spiritual life today one that is leaving little areas unchecked? As this happens, deterioration can happen quickly and problems grow. Let's be honest. Haven't you witnessed before in someone else's life? Haven't you seen this coming in your friend's life, your roommate's life? Maybe some of you worked in the ministry, and you tried to warn them, and you saw it coming. Maybe you didn't even feel comfortable telling them, but you saw it coming. Is there a time in life when this has happened to you? When your conscience kind of bothered you, but you thought, I don't need to really worry about that. It's not a big enough problem. Man, I have this under control. And you dismiss away a little problem that's just a little bit of a broken window in your life. We have to be very careful to not dismiss those broken windows. What are we inviting in? First verse I'll show you in Proverbs 24:30. I think they're common verses for many of you. But it's such a valuable lesson. Proverbs 24, verse 30, you're welcome to turn there. I will read them for you as well because I'm going to have to keep moving quickly. I went by the field of the slothful, by the vineyard of the man void of understanding. You know, you would say just being a little bit lazy, being a little bit ignorant is not a big deal. But what did he learn from that person? Lo, is all grown over with thorns. Nettles had covered the face thereof, and the stone wall thereof is broken down. Do you know those things happen a little at a time? Do you know those things don't happen overnight? Those things deteriorate over a period of time. And the first time that he saw a nettle starting to come up, he did not address it. He said, well, what's the big deal? And pretty soon, that whole garden was overtaken, and a stone wall had broken down. What walls in your spiritual life are being overgrown today? You may see a wall broken down and said, oh, that happened quickly. Did it really? Or did we invite problems in and never address them? So what happened to the guy who observed? Then I saw, I considered it well. I looked upon it and received instruction. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands of sleep. What is that? An unwillingness to address the problem. An unwillingness to admit that I need help. An unwillingness to admit that I need preaching, that I need God to work in my heart and my life. An unwillingness to admit that I need to open up and say, you know what, God, whatever changes you see that need to be made, I'm willing to make them. A little bit of flirting with a little bit of immorality and saying, I can kind of dance that line. No, it's a broken window. A little bit of a lack of self-discipline in our lives that we may dismiss and say it's not a big deal, when in reality is you're inviting in issues that you don't see coming. Verse 34, so should I. Poverty come as one that traveleth, and I want as an armed man. You will be held captive because you invited all those problems into your life. Now, sometimes this can creep in other areas of life, maybe not spiritually, like getting weight and being out of shape. Have you guys at all started to figure out that as you get older, this happens easier. You start to say, man, I can eat anything I want. Then about 3 years later, you're like, yeah, we can start to tell it too, right? You have that problem. Man, when you're growing young, you can eat anything you want. You can eat as much as you want. It doesn't matter. But as you get older, it starts to catch up, and you have to be a little more careful with that. Maybe debt. Hey, I can go out and buy that. Hey, you going to go out to eat? Absolutely, I'm going to go out to eat. Now you have bills to pay, and you've lost sight of the fact that you have to then restrain yourself from spending money unnecessarily. Some of you have learned that lesson of self-discipline. Some of you have not, and you're getting yourself in to debt, which could be a broken window, maybe wasting time on activity that is becoming an addiction. You know, hey, what's a couple funny YouTube videos? And 2 hours later, you're still engaged. This game is so much fun on your phone. Pretty soon, you're spending more time on that than you are with God. You're spending more time on that than you do in prayer. You're spending more time on that than you do engaging people and serving people. Because what was a pleasurable activity may not be sinful, but has become a broken window or an area of concern in your life. How about justifying something you know is wrong? Aren't we good at that? Aren't we good at talking ourselves into something or say, I deserve this. I deserve this little thing. It's not really that big a deal. I know I can be good at it, and my guess is you can be as well. What's the big deal? It's not a big issue like some of these other things. That's exactly how the New York City subway became the most unsafe subway in the world. Because as the first broken window happened, as people started tagging, little seats, oh, that's cute, oh, we'll get to that, and they never did, and what happened is catastrophe. What does your life look like today? Are there any little areas that are going unchecked that are inviting in bigger issues? We'll talk about a couple of broken windows. The first one is the lack of self-discipline. Self-discipline. This is a very small window that can be devastating. What is self-discipline? Self-discipline is sacrificing what you want now for what you truly want later. Man, I feel like playing a video game now, but what do you really want later? I feel like spending my money on this. What do you really think is best for you in the long term? Man, I feel like looking at this picture, but what is really what you want in the long term? Sacrificing what you want right now, what you truly want deep in your heart and you know is right, sacrificing that, say, I'm going to discipline myself and say no now. Because of my future marriage, my future ministry, my future life that I have with the Lord, my future spiritual life, I'm going to sacrifice now because there are people that God will allow me to influence in my life. All of those things are self-discipline. Little things like just hitting the snooze bar, not getting up in time, seem like a very small issue, but can lead to great problems. Little things like not going to bed on time at night. You know what takes self-discipline to say, it's time to go to bed? I don't need to stay up, now it's time. Not just allowing yourself to fall asleep because now you finally fell asleep because you're messing on your phones, you're messing on a computer, or you're out playing around. When it's time to go to bed, go to bed. And when it's time to get up, get up. What is it that's telling your body what it needs and what it's doing and making a plan for your life? You say, oh, it's not a big deal. It is a huge deal. It's a broken window. Not being able to pay your bill is a big deal. I know it can seem insurmountable to some of you, but it is a big deal. What's best for you? What appeals to you right now? What are the choices you're making? What is best for you versus what appeals to me right now? Do I feel like praying right now? Or do I feel like self-indulging in something my body wants to do? Do I feel like going soul winning right now? Do I feel like getting up and going on my bus route this morning? You know, it's not a big deal. Do I feel like sacrificing now to help some people that are in my ministry? Do I feel like preparing and studying my Bible right now like I should? It's not a big deal. What happens is you allow those little broken windows and that little graffiti to start happening in your life. You're going to start to drift in ways you did not think were possible. You're going to start to cut corners and you're going to start to compromise in areas that you do not want to end up in. But what happens? You let those little areas of self-discipline go unchecked. And as they go unchecked, you start having huge issues. As you're having a problem right now, going to bed on time, getting up on time, paying your bill, saying no when you're supposed to say no, controlling your mouth when you're supposed to control your mouth, controlling your anger when you're supposed to control your anger, controlling these outbursts that are just unacceptable, being kind to other people. If you find yourself, you cannot control yourself, you may think it's not a big deal. You justify why it's okay, but it's not okay. It's a huge red flag that says, I have a broken wheel in my life, and I'm unwilling to address it. Moving on to the second broken window of someone that you may not feel is necessary, but I feel it's a good one. Maybe you're not there yet, but that loving others. And let's tell you, this could be a little bit tough, because haven't we all rationalized why that person is the exception? You have not met my roommate. Oh, my word. Have you ever seen this guy? Have you ever seen this girl? Have you ever heard them speak? Have you just had a five-minute conversation with this person? You know someone's probably saying that about you right now too, right? But we all rationalize why that person is impossible. And when we do that, we go above and beyond to do a good deed to someone else to make up for it. You can be super rude to somebody, and then you go out, your conscience kind of bothers you, so you'll be really nice to someone else, right? Have you ever done that? Got really mad at someone at a store, got really mad at your roommate, got really mad at a friend or family member, or you did something really just unkind to someone else, or maybe you cut them off in traffic and you're saying, oh, I'm gonna be extra nice. I'll put an extra dollar in my tip. I'm a great person. See, it's all okay. But you do that to make up for how you treated someone else. The thing that I don't know how to enforce to you enough is, or put on your conscience enough is, we all represent more than ourselves. Every time you go anywhere, you truly represent Jesus Christ. You're a billboard for him. How would he handle that situation? How would he get along with that person? How would he handle the situation with that person that is brutal to deal with? And I know this is how I think. Can't I just read my Bible or pray more instead of getting along with everybody? How many people think that sounds better? You know, you have that person? Yeah, it's just easier. Because I can get along by myself. I can pray. You know what? God's easy to get along with. I can read my Bible. I'm learning. And we justify in our head why you have a host of broken relationships behind you, why your coworkers at work think, you know what? That guy's a jerk. He's supposed to be a Christian. He's a jerk. I see him cutting corners. I see him not working hard. I see him not doing what the boss says. You know, my roommate never cleans the room. They always leave a mess behind. They never go above and beyond. They never treat me. Man, when I'm gone in a room, I don't know if they're going to take my stuff, if they're going to eat my food. I don't know what's going to happen. But you don't know that, but that is a broken window where you are not representing Christ the way you should. Matthew 5:23 convicted me one morning as I was reading my Bible, and you can turn there too if you can. I have it, Matthew 5:23. Therefore, if I bring thy gift to the altar, this is a good thing, right? You're taking your gift to the altar. You're going to church. You're making it right with God. This is your personal walk with God. This is reading the Bible. This is coming before him. So you're bringing that gift to the altar. And as you're going to serve the Lord or connect to the Lord or make sure you're spiritual with the Lord, what happens? There remembrance that thy brother hath aught against me. When I read this passage, it said thy brother has something against you. It does not say I have something against them. They have something against me. That means I didn't do anything wrong, but they feel I did. When I read that, that convicted me, and I said, well, sometimes I don't do much wrong, right? They have no reason to be upset with me. But the verse there says, Jesus speaking, he said, hey, if you want to come get right with my Father, and as you're coming to get right, as you're coming to read your Bible, go to church, pray, spend time with me, you remember someone else has something against you. Now, my guess is, if I ask you right now, does anyone have anything against you? We could probably all give someone. Now, I'll tell you, as I sat there and wondered what would happen, my mind started justifying why we are right, why they are wrong, and then recruiting people to my point of view. Aren't we good at that? You want to get the word out as quick as possible. You know what they did? Can you believe that? And if they're not on your side, you start recruiting them. Because you want more people, because you feel like if I get more people to agree with me, it proves I'm right. If I get more people on my side, I hurt them more, I prove my point, and I retain my spiritual level. But as I thought, before I went to verse 24, I said, you know what I think it's going to say? And I'll show you a couple of verse options I wish it said. So these are just going to be on the screen. Number one, pray that the Lord will change his heart. If I remember, you know what, that brother has something against me, you know what, God, change his heart. Man, make it right. Doesn't that sound good? Make it spiritual. I'll just pray about it. God, you can get in there and change his heart. Doesn't that sound easier? Or how about this one? Rejoice that you have a good relationship with the Lord. Man, I'm glad I'm not like that guy. God, you know, you and I are tight. I'm here. He ain't. Right? I'm going to rejoice, God. Man, me and you give each other a high five. Look at that reprobate over there. Thankful we're not all like him. Or about this option? Let's just turn it to the Lord. Let's act pious. Ask the Lord to fix the relationship. I wish the Bible said one of those three things, because it would be a whole lot easier. But instead, Matthew 5:24 actually says, leave there thy gift before the altar. Go thy way. First, be reconciled to thy brother, and then come and offer thy gift. I don't like that verse. How many of you like to be the one to go ask for forgiveness when you didn't even do anything wrong in the first place? How many of you have never done anything wrong in the first place, right? How many are very carefully wording, I'm sorry that you're offended by what I didn't do wrong. And I hope that one day your spiritual level will match my IQ. But until then, I'll forgive you. Are we good now? How many of you ever heard a forgiven statement, prepared statement from someone else like that? How many of you want to throw up when you hear it, right? But I'm good at that. Matthew 5:24, Jesus saying, you know what my Father says? Go make it right with them. Get reconciled with them. Then come and offer thy gift. You know, some of you, your testimony is, when you're treated unfairly, you go above and beyond to make it right, even when you're not the one that should. And your testimony speaks loudly. Some of you on your ministry have gone above and beyond when people have taken advantage of you. And you have come back and said, what can I do to make it right? And they recognize your humility. And they see your spirit. And they allow you to continue to minister to them. College students in the past have handled situations at work in such a way that boss is compelled to come find out what's different about you and trust Christ. I can think of one now that got actually promoted, big promotion. He lives in Houston, Texas now. But I met him, and he said, I work with college guys, and I don't, frankly, it made me nervous. Okay, is this good or bad? I had no idea. He was not a saved man. He said, those guys are amazing. I said, really? I went to his house several times, and one of those times, he trusted Christ, called his wife in. She trusted Christ. He still texts me probably every 3 months. Calls me, Pastor Keith. Hey, Pastor Keith, how are you doing? I'm praying for you. You know why he trusted Christ? Because a college student took this verse and applied it to his life. Because when this guy saw other coworkers complain, whine, blame other people, he said these guys had a great spirit, worked hard, and were different. Do you have someone, is your roommate, are you speaking to each other? Is there a relationship in your life that's broken, and as you come to pray to the Lord, as you open your Bible, as you come sit in the service, say, man, God, speak to me, and he goes, I did. Go make it right. Is there someone that comes to mind you need to make it right with? Ask yourself, what does love require of me? That's what Jesus asked himself, and he continually sacrificed and gave. I find it can be easier to just get along with the Lord and ignore people. You know why? Because Jesus doesn't argue with me. He just listens. He may think I'm an idiot, but he still listens. Jesus doesn't disagree with me. He may try to convict me, but I can blow through that. And I do all the talking. I can block Jesus out and not listen to anything he says. He doesn't raise his voice. He sits there, and he tolerates my stupidity at times. And he chooses to get along with me. Do we do that with others? Are we treating others with the love and respect that Jesus would give to them? Would anyone accuse you of that? And that person, I don't know what's different about them. They treat people with love and respect. My wife ran into someone, I'm sorry, I don't remember who, but she was out somewhere in another state and ran into me, and they talked to her about me, which makes me nervous. It was a lady, and she had worked for me years ago at the college. It was a compliment to me because she said, "Man, your husband always treated people with respect." Now, I'm not saying that they're right, but I'm saying when she said that to my wife, it felt good to me. If anyone thinks I have that testimony, it makes me feel like to that one person, I treated him right. Can people say that about you? Do you treat ladies with respect, men? Do you respect them? Do you respect them with your actions, with your tongue that you talk about them? Do you treat them with respect how you think about them? Do you treat them with respect with how you're kind to them? Girls, do you build the men up? Do you respect them with your mouths or talk about what losers they are? Do you talk to them with respect? Do you help them to see what they could become with the Lord's help? Do you build them up or do you tear them down? Good deeds and spiritual disciplines do not compensate for the mistreatment of others. You may go out and try to witness to more people, and that's a very good thing. But if you're trampling over people that God loves and ruining his testimony to get there, that does not make up for it. Your treatment of others can be a broken window that can lead to big problems. If your tongue is continually getting into problems, there is a problem in your life. It could be a broken window that you're having. God's heart yearns for his children to get along with each other. You know, I have three boys. So many times growing up, and these guys could probably all testify to the same thing with multiple kids. You hear kids arguing. You hear them just at each other. And you just don't care who does it, but you want one of them to stop, right? One of them to apologize so that all that goes away, especially when you're driving on a road trip. You guys ever been there before? Can you guys just shut up? Just you stop. But I don't care what he did, right? You don't care. You just want it to stop. Maybe you're not been there, but you've been the one that won't shut up, right? How many of you have that brother or sister that always has to get the last word in? Always. And if they don't get the last word and they do something really stupid, like they stick their tongue out or they make that one face where you just want to slap them as hard as you can. Now, how many have actually slapped them as hard as you can? Doesn't that feel good? All right. But don't do it. But let me mention this. God's heart yearns for us to get along with each other. You know, if my boys, as they get older, what if they refuse to speak to each other? And I knew that. And they refused to get along and be friends, but they were still kind to me. Do you think my heart would be happy with that? My heart would grieve. And I would sacrifice my relationship with them to try to reconcile the two of them to be friends again. How do you think God views us when we bicker and fuss and fight, but we act like we want to get along with him? Does that grieve him? Do you find yourself arguing and fussing and fighting over stupid things? Do you find yourself always at odds, always trying to get your opinion across, your view across? Do you find yourself fighting that broken window of not being able to get along with other people? Moving quick, it's going to be a quick one. The last broken window is one that I personally struggle with. It's entitlement. We all feel we're owed everything, don't we? We're owed. Man, you hear people on the radio. We're owed free health care. Do you understand it's not free, but they don't. We're owed free health care. Everyone in America, I think it's hilarious. They keep saying, I'm sure there is, that I'll see two ads. One is childhood hunger, right? And the very next one is childhood obesity. I'm like, make your mind up, all right? We have one of the two. You can't have both, all right? It's very hungry. Maybe, well, yes, you can. The person that continues to eat can still be hungry, so there we go. All right, you hear both. But people, especially in America, feel we're entitled to everything. We're entitled, man, I deserve perks. I don't know why in the world I don't get more perks at my job. How long have you worked there? 3 days. It's ridiculous. Right? We have all this time. We think we're entitled to everything. What is entitlement? It's a feeling that you're owed special privileges or special treatment. Do we ever feel that way? Do you feel that because you're a servant of the Lord? Man, I go to Halls Anderson. Do you feel God owes you things? Do you feel the people on your route owe you things? Bus captains, do you feel like your workers owe you things? Because, man, you're a bus captain. I'm a division leader now. Hey, step up. Listen to me. I'm giving you some spiritual words. I agree you should respect them and to listen, but when you start feeling entitled, That's nauseating. That's not what we should be. You know, as I started to think about this one day in my own life, because this Christian life, serving God, is not about speaking to large groups of people. It's not about signing Bibles. It's not about putting my picture on all brochures, all billboards, so people know who I am. It's not about my name being known. It's about serving others. And if your motivation to being in the ministry is for your name, or what special privileges you can get, or so you can have a comfortable life, or so you can have a group of people that just follow me. If you want to do it because you want to be served, that's entitlement. If you want a special title, man, if I could just get this title, I've arrived. That's entitlement. Jesus Christ addresses Matthew 20, verse 25, as bluntly as I could think of. When I thought of my, I started to struggle with entitlement a few weeks ago. This is the first passage that came to mind. It hit me. Jesus called them unto him and smiled and said, you know that the princes of the Gentiles, this is the Gentiles, this is the unsaved. Jesus said, yeah, you know the princes of the Gentiles, the worldly leaders, the unspiritual people, you know what they do? They exercise dominion over them. They want to assert their authority over them. And they that are great exercise authority upon them. They're great in their own head. They're the boss. They're the big cheese. They're the guys that are up top. They're exercising dominion. They're making it clear they get the perks and the minions don't. He goes, you know those people, right? And the disciples like, yeah, we know them. You know why I had to address this? Read the whole passage. The disciples got their mom to come say, hey, can we sit in special seats? Can we have special privileges? Can we be recognized for how wonderful we are? How much we sacrifice for you, Jesus? Can we sit in a special seat by you? That's entitlement. And Jesus instantly broke into this little talk. He said, hey guys, let me tell you something. You know those Gentiles that want special seats? You know the ones that want special perks? You know the ones that are worried about what benefits they're going to get for serving me? You know the ones that want all the fanfare, all the accolades, all the opportunities to speak in front of big crowds, all the opportunities they think I'm going to go speak at a teen meeting, everyone's going to pat me on the back and think I'm awesome and give me five? All the young girls and all the young guys are going to think I'm amazing. Man, I can't wait till I feed my ego that way. That's how the disciples felt. Next verse. But listen to how blunt Jesus is. But it shall not be so among you. To me, that's pretty blunt. Jesus looked at him in the eye, man to man. So you know the Gentiles, man, they want all the perks. They want dominion. They lord it over their followers. You know what? Yeah, yeah, we know that. Yeah, that sounds good to us. He looks at him and says, it's not so among you guys. Not even happening. Now, can you imagine Jesus looking you in the eye when you say, yeah, I'm owed this. I deserve this. Why don't I get the special perk? Man, college needs to give me more. Jesus, you owe me more. I can't believe this. And you start thinking, hey, it's not so among you. Talk about the wind going out of your sails. But whosoever will be great among you, yeah, who's going to be great? Let him be your minister. Are we serving others? Is that our heart, sacrifice and serving? Whosoever be chief among you, you want special seats? Fine. Let him be your servant. Now, David is not like this anymore. I wish he were, but now I'm just picking on him. We had some furniture delivered when David was about 3 or 4 years of age. They came, and these guys were delivering the furniture. Very nice guys. My wife is always nice, giving drinks and stuff. And I know Dave thought he was helping. He carried a pillow in or something. You know, that's about all he could handle anyhow. But so he carried it. And I remember the guy looking at him in our driveway. He goes, hey, buddy, how are you? He's real nice to him. He goes, what do you want to be when you grow up? And David looked at him and says, I want to be a servant. And I was like, okay, you're just embarrassing me greatly right now, Dave. And the guy's like, okay, all right. Then he kind of looked at me like I had a problem. I'm like, he has a problem, not me. But what if our hearts are all that way? Wouldn't Christianity be better off? Wouldn't the people we serve be better off? Even as the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto you, but to minister and to give his life a ransom for many, are you willing to give your life? Are you worried what it can do for you? Why are you in the Christian life? Are you feeling entitled? what benefits, what perks, what attention, what fanfare, what popularity, what fame can I get? So they asked this question. Jesus said, can you drink the cup that I'm going to drink of? Yeah, we can. Well, you will. A lot different cup than they thought. Why are we in the ministry? So today, what broken windows need to be fixed in your personal life? What little problem are you not addressing that's going to lead to catastrophe? What little problem that you have could ruin your future ministry, could hinder your relationships, could hinder your marriage, your family, could limit what God could do through you because of a horrible moral problem, because you can't pay your bills, because you can't get out of bed. And I can tell you guys right now that are good men, but you know what? They can never pay their bills, and you know what they're going to do? Flounder the rest of their life. I'll tell you guys right now, they're great guys, but you know what they can do? They can't get out of bed and control their schedule. You know what I know you guys can continually struggle with? What their eyes look at. You know what? They're my age. You know what they're doing? They're good men. But these broken windows continue to resurface in their lives again and again. And it's amazing. When that happens, you invite everything else in. You'll see guys start to cut corners. Their self-discipline and their relationships, or this feeling of entitlement. Pretty soon, vagrants are coming in. Panhandlers are coming in. The yard's growing up. Property values plummet. Crime increases. Your life can become a catastrophe because you won't address these little issues. Are you considering temptation that once would have been out of the question? Are you doing something now that if you'd have done it a few months back, you would have said, oh, that's shocking, but now it's no big deal because now you're taking one step beyond that? Are you thinking things that you would have said are unacceptable, but now it's just part of your daily plan? Are you skipping your Bible reading? Are you skipping prayer? Are you skipping soul winning? Are you missing that fervent heart for the Lord? It's not a big deal. I'm still in Hal's Anderson. Is it a broken window? Are you and your girlfriend taking liberties that you should not take? But it's okay because, and you justify it, that's a broken window. Are you just not appreciating what the Lord has done for you and feeling like he owes you? Man, look what I do for you, God. Why won't you do this for me? And you get angry. That's entitlement. What temptation is plaguing you now? What compromise have you made that is a broken window? You're inviting all the other demons into your life. Bow your head, please. Dear Heavenly Father,